Just to review what we were doing yesterday, we're talking about the senses. Most of us here have five senses, and these senses are gateways to the soul. They also affect the body, but they are ways in which the world and the devil are getting to this present generation in which we are living that God has termed a sensual generation. And they are having their effect on Christianity. They're having their effect on me. And they're having their effect on you. What you look at, we were talking about yesterday, will affect what you go after. My eye affects my heart. Yesterday we talked about the eyesight. And today we're going to talk about sound. We're going to talk about the ear. So, if you will notice on your little sheet, there's a picture of the ear. And this ear we'll try to describe. It has four main parts. I call it the dish, the drum, the amplifiers, and the signal converter. Now the ear, as well as the eye, is one of the most amazing creations in all of the world. This ear sticks out from the side of our head. Sometimes it sticks out farther than we want it to. But it's out there listening for sound waves. And these sound waves come into the ear, and they are channeled through this little canal shown in the picture. And they go down to a little eardrum there that I have numbered number two. And this eardrum is a very small, tightly stretched piece of skin, like what is over a drum. And this eardrum, when it senses sound, or when sound waves are channeled down to it, it vibrates and it moves approximately 1/1,000,000,000 of a centimeter, or 1/1,000,000,000 of a quarter of an inch. Now that's not very much movement. And so God created in the ear an amplifier to amplify the movement. And that's shown right in this section right here. And those of you who've been through some biology classes or something know that there's a little thing in there called the hammer. And this hammer hits the other bone called the anvil. These are the bones of the inner ear. And that anvil is connected to a little gadget called the stirrup. And because of the way that God has created the ear, it amplifies the sound. So it, from the eardrum, this hammer is connected to the eardrum as it senses this 1/1,000,000,000 of a centimeter. The muscles are stretched in a certain way that the hammer amplifies it. And it hits the anvil. The anvil is connected to the stirrup. The stirrup is connected to this oval window. And this oval window is looking into this snail type of thing called the cochlea. Now this snail, this little thing called the cochlea, it means snail, I think, in one of the languages, maybe French or something like that. Is that right, Clayton? No, it's not French. Okay. What is it? Latin. Okay. And this little snail looking thing has some liquid in it. And it also has little hair-like cells that go out into the little liquid. And these hair-like cells are different lengths. It has maybe 20,000 of these hair-like cells of different lengths. And when the eardrum senses the sound and the amplifier is amplified and it begins knocking on the oval window, it creates waves through the cochlea. These little waves go all the way through this little snail, which I think turns out to be about an inch and a half long when stretched out. When it's rolled up, it's about the size of a pea. And these waves go through there, and as the waves come in at a certain frequency, they begin to resonate or vibrate certain of the hair-like cells, or certain of these little hairs that are sticking out into the liquid. So if you were to go over and hit middle C, now what frequency is middle C? Nobody knows?
256.
256, what do you call it, hertz cycles per second, hertz. And this is vibrating at 256. So this vibration comes into the cochlea at 256 hertz per second. And there is one hair-like gadget in there that begins to vibrate. And it sends a signal to the brain that says, he's getting middle C. I think we can understand how that might happen. But when we hear, let's say that Clayton goes over here and plays the piano, and we've got all kinds of notes coming out. This is the amazing thing to me, to think that this eardrum and these amplifiers and this cochlea is picking up all of the frequencies at once. It isn't just transmitting one frequency, it's transmitting hundreds of frequencies. There's hundreds of different waves and resonances going through that lake. It picks them all up. And you hear it as the playing of the piano. It's really an amazing, amazing device. Now, the second part of our little talk is what I call hearing heroin. Kind of a strange thing, but it just popped in my mind. I'll tell you why I'm calling it that. Because probably the most addicting drug in the whole world is heroin. They say one shot of heroin will cause you to become an addict. You can't get away from it. One shot, that's all. Just one. We've had some experience with it. I've worked with some people who've been on it. And it is an extremely addicting drug. And that's why I use that here, hearing heroin. Because sound has an addicting effect on your mind and your soul. The first one that I want to look at, the first addicting effect, is music. And we'll turn to the book of Daniel. Daniel 3 and verse 4. Then an herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of the fiery furnace. Now, here is Nebuchadnezzar, and he is going to command all of these people that have been invited to the plain of Dura. He's going to command them to bow down and worship an idol. And he realizes that some of them are not going to want to do it, because maybe they have a conviction against the worship of idols. Or maybe they're just plain stubborn. Maybe they don't like Nebuchadnezzar. Whatever may be the reason, Nebuchadnezzar realizes that the use of music is something that can force a person or to do something he really doesn't want to do. It will make it easier for him. So he calls in, let's call it the hard rock band, and he says, play them something. And when you hear it playing, bow down. You know, if I had, let's suppose that I, during this week, I invented a gadget. And the gadget was extremely worthless. It wasn't, you couldn't do anything with it. You couldn't play with it. It wouldn't accomplish anything. But I wanted to sell it. Probably the best way to sell it is to have somebody write a song about it. So you couldn't get it out of your mind. You got to have one of these, let's call it XYZ gadgets. And you get this in your mind, pretty soon everybody's singing it. You say, where do you get one of these anyway? That's what the devil is using today to sell his ideas. He's using music. Now, you know, a lot of people talk about backward masking in music. And I think that there's probably something to it. But what really worries me is what is written on the forward side of the tape. Let me give you an example. I don't listen to a lot of it, most of it, but occasionally I hear a song and it perks up my ear and I say, I'm going to listen to it. So I listen to it and I heard a song and here's what it said. It had five words in it and it repeated them over and over and over all the way through the song. That's all it had. It was very easy to write and it was very popular, I guess, because they played it on the radio. Here was the five words. Let's go all the way. Okay, you don't have to be too old to realize what the devil is trying to put across. Five words that perhaps have a double meaning, but we all know what he's trying to say. Heard another song. I thought it was a Christian song because it was talking about heaven. So I listened to it, and here's what it said. Heaven is just one sin away. Can't wait another day. I think I'm giving in. See, the devil has not changed his tune. He's not changed his theme. What he's saying is, here is a can of sin, and I'm going to label it heaven. And all you've got to do is partake of it, just like Eve in the garden. You partake of it, and it will give you pleasure. And here's someone who's looking at this thing and saying, wow, I don't think I can hold off any longer, whatever it may be. That's what the devil is using. And I say to you, you know, if you come to my house, I might, and you listen to some music, well, I might be discriminating, and I might shut it off, and I might not. I probably would. Depends on what you listen to. But here's what I'm going to say is this. That you, in your teenage years, are on your own a lot. And your parents can't go around and tell you what to listen to and what not to listen to. And all I'm saying is, you are responsible for what you listen to. You are responsible for what comes in the ear that affects the soul. You say, well, I'm not listening to the words, I'm just listening to the music. But those words get in your memory, right? And you know what happens is they get in there and you can't get them out and they affect you. I remember Harry Hayhoe gave me some advice. He didn't give it to me personally, but in the meeting, he said, you know, if you can't get something out of your mind, then repeat a hymn over and over and over again until it's gone. He used hymn number 27 in the little flock. But you know, what happens is it gets in there. You may not think that it's in there, but it will come back at the wrong time. So the devil is using music to force people into subjection morally in this country. That's what's happening. One reason why the morals are dropping down is because they've accepted the music. You know, if someone were to come up to me and say, you know, I'd like to encourage you to go down to the bar and to spend some time with a prostitute down there, I'd say, don't talk to me. Get out of my life. Don't bother me with that stuff. But if they put it in a song, you know, I'll confess to you that I like or have liked in my life Western music. And I came to this point in my life where I found myself through this music always down at the bar with somebody who wasn't my wife. And I said, I can't stand it any longer. I don't want to be there. And my wife doesn't want me there. So I shut it off. Still a temptation to me. So the devil is getting to us through music. Listen to what the words say. There's a message in the music, but listen to the words, because they're being transmitted and written on the affections of your heart. Now, the second way that the devil is getting to us is through immoral conversation. And I'd like you to turn to the book of Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 3. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be named once among you as becometh saints. Now notice this, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor... Now the right translation, I think, is coarse or immoral jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. You know, likewise, as the music, you know, the devil uses music, what the devil is using today is humor. And I would say that every one of you have been approached at school, probably, by somebody who says, let me tell you a joke. And you say, okay. And about halfway through, you realize that you're going down the drain, morally, with it. You don't know what to do. That's why the meeting last night was so good, to take a stand. And I found myself in this situation a lot. And I just want to say that, you know, when somebody says, let me tell you a joke, say, first of all, could you rate the joke? Give me a rating on it. Is it X-rated, R-rated, PG, or whatever? That's what I want to see what the rating is before I listen to it. And I don't think they'll condemn you. Say, you know, I'm not into that kind of thing, or whatever you want to say, but don't listen to it. The very first bad one that I ever heard is still written on the memory of my brain cells. I can't get rid of it. I don't even think about it, but I know it's there. Immoral conversation. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, or coarse joking, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. And I've referenced here on my outline 2 Peter 2, 8. You can turn to it if you want to. I'm going to quote it. It says, it's talking about Lot, and it says, for that righteous man dwelling among the immoral people of Sodom, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. He saw what they did, he heard what they said, and he was vexed by it. It brought him under this satanic power that he could not get loose from. So, eventually, God had to come in and get him out of that terrible place. You know, my wife went down one time to the sixth grade to visit the sixth grade down the street to see what it was like. And she came back and she said, I have never in all of my life heard such rotten, filthy conversation everywhere on the playground. Kids coming out of classes, cursing, swearing, using... She said, why, there was this one kid that said something that was so bad. She said, I turned to him and said, don't you ever say that again. And she said, this kid looked at her like, hey, lady, we talk that way all the time around here. You know, of atmosphere that you are in, immoral conversation. Thirdly, gossip. Now, there's a lot of people that look down on the first two, but they're into the third one. Very addictive. Very addictive, this gossip kind of thing. You know, Deuteronomy 19:15 says that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, let every word be established. Don't listen to something that is destroying somebody else if it's not true. Maybe even if it is true. You know, there's certain things that you want to be a dead-end street to. Somebody tells you something that is maybe critical or that is really bad about somebody else, it's good not to pass it on. That's what Proverbs 11:13 says, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit conceals the matter. He doesn't tell it. That's hard, isn't it? I was sitting in the back of a van up at Hess Lake this year, and my little buddy, Joel Pasco, he's 7 or 8, and he's a real conversationalist. He says, "Let me tell you a secret." And I said, "If it's a secret, maybe you better not tell it." He says, "Oh, I'll tell you anyway." And I said, "Okay." He says, "My brother has a girlfriend." And I said, "Oh, really?" He says, "Let me tell you something else. He's going to get married. He's 16. And so I said, "Well, it could be." But, you know, we want to be sure that we become a dead-end street. See what I've done? I've transmitted this to all of you. You'll probably go back to the Pascos. Okay, so gossip. Fourth one is criticism. You know, this is one of the most subtle of all, the critic. Because the critic wears a godly mask. You know what I mean? He comes around and he says, "Well, something that really is a real concern to my soul." And then he just destroys somebody with criticism. You know, I've got something. I don't want to talk about that a whole lot, but let me tell you something that will help. In Philippians, it talks about, in Philippians 2, about esteeming other people better than ourselves. And when you find somebody is criticizing, find something good to say about them. They're part of the body. You know, my hand here doesn't always operate the way I want it to. Especially when I'm playing volleyball or something like that. It doesn't always hit things in the right direction. But I've never criticized my hand. I've never said, "I've got the dumbest looking hand. It doesn't do what I want it to do." I take care of my hand. And if you start criticizing my hand, I'm going to get my feelings hurt. Because it's part of my body. And every believer is a part of the body of Christ. Don't criticize them. Unless you go to them personally and tell them what you want to say. That'll be a help. Constructive criticism. Well, I hear a lot of destructive criticism, and it's very addictive. Now, I've got something on here called filtering the impurities. We'll look at this in Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest or noble, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things." Notice that I put the filter on the ear on my drawing. It's got a big long filter on it. So when something comes into my ear, the first question I ask is it true? Boy, I've stopped a lot of people right outside the door of the meeting room. They've told me this story and I say, "Is it true?" They'll say, "Well, I mean, I think it is." "Well, where did you get the information?" They don't want to tell me because they got it from the local gossip or something. They won't tell me. So I say, "Well, over there is the person that we're talking about. Let's go ask him." "No, please don't." "No, that's all right. Just forget that I ever told you." So I reject it. I don't want it. I don't want something that's not true in my mind. Something that is noble. Is it uplifting? Would it be good for me to listen to it? Is it something that would characterize somebody of nobility? Is it just? Is it pure? You know, all of those things. If it isn't, reject it. In other words, don't put it into permanent memory. Just write it on the scratch pad of your mind and then erase it before you remember it. Is it lovely? Is it of good report? And you know that there's only one person in all of the world that ever answers to all of these. And that's the Lord Jesus Christ. He was the only true, the only noble, the only just, the only pure, lovely person of good report. we fail in a lot of these things. But I say, you've got to have a filter on your mind, or else you are going to get in a lot of impurities. And I know that some of you have cars that you think a lot about, and you go down to the store and you buy the best oil, and you buy some oil additive, and you put in some gasoline additive, and you put in the best antifreeze, because you want to take care of the inside of the car. What about the inside of your soul? Is it possible that you are taking in some garbage that will destroy, will defile your mind? Well, that's why you need this filter on there. Now, we'll go very quickly over number three. I call it hearing hang-ups. There are things, and we'll talk about spiritual things, people that are hard of hearing spiritually, people that can't hear. Sit in a meeting, the meeting is right in there, and they didn't get a thing out of it because they weren't listening. They're hard of hearing. I was back on the farm. You know, I always wonder about hard of hearing people. I think it's something that is real, but I'm always suspicious of them a little bit. My brother is hard of hearing. And you know, my grandfather went over to see Grandpa on the weekend. I was in college, and I was up there about 2 o'clock in the morning grinding away on the studies, and it's getting really sleepy, so I turned on the radio, a little bit of music, a little bit of Western music, and I had it so low that I had my ear right over to the speaker, and off in the far end and on the upper story of my house was my grandpa, who was hard of hearing. So pretty soon I hear a creak up there, so I go flip like that, and I shut it off. So here comes Grandpa down the stairs slowly. Yes. So Grandpa opens the door. I've got all the doors shut coming in. He opens all the doors and he sits down in the rocking chair for a while. And he says, "Buddy." And I said, "What?" He says, "That music will never do you any good." Never could figure out how he heard that. I don't know. Someday when I get to heaven, I don't think he heard it. I think he just looked at all the closed doors and figured it out, something. There's people who are spiritually hard of hearing. Notice in B there, there's people who tune out at certain frequencies. There's I don't know exactly what the curve looks like, the acoustic curve, but they measure sound in decibels, and someplace, as you get up in frequency, your hearing tunes out, maybe 15,000-20,000 hertz. And if you go down in frequency, probably pretty soon it'll tune out at the lower frequencies, maybe 60 or 30 or somewhere in there hertz. Sometimes you can't even hear it. You can just feel the vibrations. So you can't hear anything like 100,000 hertz. You can't hear that. But there are people right in the middle of the bell-shaped audio curve that have a loss of hearing because maybe they, during the war or something, they sat right beside a cannon and it was going at a certain rate. And so for some reason that they've lost hearing in that frequency range. There's a lot of people in Christianity like that too. You know, they'll say, "Oh, here we go again. So-and-so's speaking on this subject," and they'll tune him out. They don't even hear what he says. And there's a lot of us that our minds drift. We hear it, but we don't really listen. Now, what I really want to spend some time on here is what I call the hearing hotline. And in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 12, we might just look at that. 1 Peter 3 and verse 12. "For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil." The Lord hears you every time you pray. You know, every father is used to handling a conversation of 5 people talking to him at once. Okay? And he learns, the mind is made so that it can only concentrate on one thing at a time, so he multiplexes and he just goes right down the line, and he samples like that. And he comes back and he samples. But God is not like that. He has a channel that is open to you at all times. The Lord wants you to hear. You wake up in the middle of the night. You wake up in the morning. During the test, which you didn't study for. He's listening. He wants to hear your prayers. The Lord, His eyes are over you. And His ears are always open unto your prayers. He doesn't multiplex. He listens totally, undivided attention to what you are saying. 50 million people may be praying at one time, and this infinite God hears every single one of them and answers them. You know, the next one we're going to talk about is communication or communion. Someone yesterday came up and they said, you know, I have a characteristic in my life of lukewarmness. I would say that most of us can identify with that. And you know, we went into a little bit and read the problem or read the letter to the church of Laodicea. And the lukewarm church, he likens it to the pipe. They pipe this water in from the hot springs way out there in the hills. When it came into town, it was lukewarm. And it was mineral water. It tasted yucky. And people they couldn't stand to drink it, so they had to cool it off or heat it up. And so the Lord uses this illustration. He says, if you're a lukewarm Christian, I can't stand it. I can't stand it. It doesn't taste good. But the solution to it was, behold, I stand at the door and knock. In other words, the Lord wants to come in and have a very close relationship with you. He wants to come into the home of your heart, the living room of your mind. When you go to school, He wants to come into the classroom of your heart. He wants to come into the den, into the bedroom, the place of affection and rest. And He wants you to talk to Him all through the day. And I'll tell you, you know, if you sample the world and then you sample Christianity just like that, 50% of each one, you will be lukewarm. If you get too far away from the source, you will be lukewarm. And I say it's a problem that we all have. We need to confess it and start a program in our life of communion every single day. Now, I want you to turn over to Mark chapter 1, and this is something that's quite interesting to me. I'm going to liken it to a computer. The way you talk to a computer, first of all, you give it an interrupt, and then you address it, and then you give it some instructions. Those instructions are decoded, and a response comes out of the computer. So let's watch how that happens here. In Mark chapter 1 and verse 16. Now as he walked by the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And Jesus said unto them, come, ye after me, and I will make you fishers of men. And straightway they forsook their nets, and they followed him. Now here is the Lord of glory. And he walks up, he interrupts their day. And they give him their full, undivided attention. And then he addresses them. He says, Simon and Andrew, here is the instruction. Come and follow me. They decode it. And they forsake their nets. And their response is they follow him. Somebody in this room asked, how old do you have to be before the Lord calls you into his work? And I say, everyone here is old enough to be called by the Lord. He has a certain job for you to do. He has a certain task in life, a certain place in the body. And he's saying, come and follow me, and I will show you what to do. Isn't that wonderful? What is your response? Have you responded to him? You know, this is kind of a second work that the Lord does in our hearts. Salvation is one thing, wonderful thing. But a second work in which He comes and says, I want you and I want your life. I want your heart. I want your abilities. Come and follow me, and I'll make you a fisher of men. The last thing that I want to talk about, I'm going to talk a little bit to some of you older young people. This last diagram is something that I thought about a lot. And I tried to draw a stethoscope on there. Bill probably has some kind of a newfangled one they use now, but this is the old kind. This is what I want to encourage you to do. To listen to one another. Be swift to hear, slow to speak. You know, don't be like the doctor I went to, and I would try to tell him, doctor, and he'd already have the prescription written out. Don't be that way. But listen. You know of a lot of problems that I do not know about. I will never know about them because people won't tell me. But they're telling you. And I'm saying if you listen to that message, without even giving an answer necessarily, but just listening with an understanding, sympathetic, loving heart. And you keep what is told you confidential. And you take what is told you and you amplify it in prayer to the Lord. And you go over yourself and you begin a search over here of the Bible, a fresh search of the Bible. You may even come down to your library occasionally. You may mix in some of the writings that you have in your library or your dad's library. And then you may come up with a prescription, and that prescription can be fed back to the patient. This is called shepherding. It is a job that is being neglected today. It is a job that is very close to the heart of the Lord Jesus Christ. And he told Peter to feed his lambs, to shepherd his sheep, and to feed his sheep. And I'm going to tell you why some of our meetings are not what they should be. Because we are neglecting shepherding. We do not know what the state of the flock is. And so we just minister on our favorite subject or go to our library and get something out. You notice John, when he wrote to the seven churches of Revelation, he wrote to Ephesus because they had lost their first love. He wrote to Smyrna because they were in tribulation and so on. We could go all the way down the line. He wrote to their state of soul. And that's why today, oftentimes in our meetings, they're not what they should be because this line right here has been cut. And we have become only an amplification of what is in the library. No, that's not right. The Word of God must always be tuned to the state of soul of the church. That's why we have problems. And I say to you older young people, if you want to do a work that has a very great reward up there, a work that will bring you into tune with the needs down here, and then do some of this quiet shepherding work that people are neglecting today. I want to close my meeting today with Romans chapter 12. I want you to turn to it again in verse 1. I'm going to read it a little differently than it's written here. I beseech you, therefore, young people, by the mercies of God, that ye present your ears a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not transformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And I say, if your ear is tuned into the world, you will never know what the mind of God is. But the question that I want to ask you today is the same as yesterday. In view of Calvary's cross, in view of the terrible scourging that ripped the back of the Lord Jesus apart, in view of the nails that were pounded through his hands and feet, in view of the terrible agony and suffering of Calvary's cross, the physical suffering, in view of the darkness that nobody can comprehend, the terrible lightning bolts of judgment that fell, in view of all this, are you willing this afternoon to lay your ears and the things that you listen to on the altar of sacrifice to the one who sacrificed everything to you? I want everybody in this room to answer that question. Are you willing this afternoon? Every boy, every girl, every young person, every older person, are you willing to sacrifice everything? That is, when the temptation comes and when it begins to channel in, come in through the channel of the ear, are you willing to sacrifice it and say, no? No, I will not listen to that. Are you? If just one person in this audience this afternoon is willing to say, yes, Lord Jesus, this meeting has been worth its while. Let's bow in prayer.